because I stopped doing that one because I wanted to do this one instead. It's easier to do. Setting up interviews and stuff is really stress inducing. And I mean, I was excited to talk to you guys again because I remember at least I didn't go back and listen to it because I hate hearing myself. But I'm like, to my knowledge, the last time we talked, it went over well. So
we had a good time. We just love, we love talking this shit. I guess what it comes down to.
I appreciate that. Like, you're changing your topic for us. Like, that's nice. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the thing too. Was that I felt like
this is our 69th episode.
Yeah.
That worked out.
It's very good.
Thank you guys.
Well, so, because you guys have made, I guess we should just go into the actual episode and just be like, hey, welcome to Apartment Theater. And then I can introduce you guys, because I'm not, now it's like, all right, now we're talking about the game. It's like, well, that's why we're here. So, okay. So, I mean, there's no fancy intro. We don't have any graphics or anything. We're just like, hey, guys, I'm going to do it right now. Hey, guys, welcome to Apartment Theater. With us today is Bill and Amanda Gardner.
Yay! Hello. So, thank you.
This is a first. We have an interview with someone that isn't just some guy we call Jeff Foxworthy. It's a long story. So John was on our podcast. Danny's
long story. He's going to tell it.
I am going to tell it. I was trying to think of something that was the most opposite of Irish, and I'm like, I'm going to just call him Jeff Foxworthy on the show. So every time he comes on, I call him Jeff Foxworthy.
We had a month of Irish movies, and so we decided, why not have an actual Irishman on it? And then he just kept calling him Jeff Foxworthy.
Nice. You can call me Jeff if you want. My name is Jeff.
So I guess you guys are game developers. Normally we do films here, but I used to do a podcast called Gamer Weekly. I mainly interviewed indie game developers, and one of the people that decided to come on to the show was you guys. And I remember enjoying talking to you guys. If people want to go out there and check it out, it's on YouTube somewhere. Good luck finding it, but I know it's there. I know it's there.
It happened.
It happened. Before we talked about your guys' game Perception, and I also talked to you guys about BioShock as well, because Bill, did both of you work on BioShock? Or
In spirit, Amanda, we collaborated a bit on, like, you're a married couple, and one of you is working on some creative endeavor. There's going to be collaboration, and so I would.
Named Vigors. That was my one contribution.
Really?
I did. That's like, I'm like, yeah, I'm a game dev. I named Vigors, and now
I wonder where my Vigors bottle is. It's probably in storage somewhere. I like made myself a prop little Vigors bottle. Danny does cosplays, and I like making props a lot.
Oh my god, what a perfect pair.
Yeah.
If you dig that up, I'd love to see it. Show me a
picture. I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
You also made like a bracelet too, didn't you? Of like the infinite stuff.
Yeah. I took all the like little icons of the Vigors and I put them in a bracelet.
Cass also makes jewelry, and she's done vault stuff for Fallout. I've seen BioShock. She has an Etsy. I don't know if it still works, but she makes jewelry of it.
Wow.
I've been on vacation on Etsy for 5 years, so don't.
Oh, okay. won't pressure you.
Honestly, Etsy, like when I can't find something and I wind up going to Etsy to look to see if there's something like you're describing, it's just like, it's the biggest rabbit hole.
It's a lot.
So freaking cool. I love that.
It's funny because somebody actually ripped off what I was doing with all of the BioShock gaming stuff, my bracelet designs and stuff, and underselling me, and then also put an ad out so that their product was seen first before mine.
Yeah. Capitalism.
Who are these people? That's just so
assholes. That's what they are.
Yeah. Awful. It really sucked. I was like, okay, well, that's why my sales dropped. Okay. That's cool.
Oh, man, that sucks. Sorry.
It was a bummer. But, you know, whatever. I get to talk to a developer, so, you know.
Well, thank you.
I mean, have the final laugh now.
Then they're going to email you, and they're going to be like, well, let's do an interview together. And it's actually in 4K quality, and it looks amazing, and they have crazy graphics and stuff. And we're like, we can't compete.
I will do a background check on everybody who asks for a podcast and be like, do you have any Etsy shops? Show me your wares.
I actually have, like, I don't have a problem with 4K. I just don't see a point of it right now because barely anyone has 4K like capabilities on their machines or anything. So I just I see people just sitting there bragging that they spent a lot of money for 4K when it's you're never going to use it.
I spent like ever.
Congrats, I guess.
I mean, honestly, it kind of does feel all like the Blu-ray situation. Like, well, I mean, go hand in hand. But when we made that jump from DVD to Blu-ray, And it was just kind of like, oh, great. Hey, we're going to take advantage of this. And there's definitely a huge difference. But it's just like in terms of market penetration or anything like that, just it never really just kind of like, OK, I guess we'll slowly adopt this thing. You know?
I was going to say, it's like I can definitely see a difference from DVD to Blu-ray.
Yeah. I just mean that, again, most people don't even know. I think most people don't even notice the difference. Wild to me, but most people don't have the capability.
It's funny you say that because Cass, she watched a film called Lady Bird. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they watched it. She watched it with my ex, and I'm like, why are you guys watching the DVD version? And they were like, we're watching the DVD. I'm like, how can you not tell? Look how not crisp it is. It's blocky. I hate it.
Because I don't have experience with Blu-ray. I don't think I've really ever watched a Blu-ray.
Right.
I have no perception of what I'm missing out on.
It's funny, I watched a YouTube video, you may have seen it, but it was comparing or saying part of the reason why film is in a weird state was because of the studios not getting behind a format, and between HD, DVD, and Blu-ray, that delayed the adoption, and so people were like, you had some people who adopted, some people who didn't, but the fact that there was like this 2 or 3 or 4 year delay, there wasn't a like, here's the new thing. And so it became a thing in people's minds, like Blu-ray, oh, that's just going to go away, you know, because that's what happened. Yeah. So many format wars. Mm-hmm. So interesting video where they went over like, hey, what's the point? And why it's not as big as it should be. Aside from the fact that everything's streaming and whatnot, that's a big piece, obviously. But things would have been very different. Like, I think that was a big reason why Netflix was just like, well, you know, we've got these two formats. I don't want to get involved in that. There's no point in buying. You're already forcing me to buy a new format. Just stream the damn thing. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I buy 4K Blu-rays now. If like there's like a special edition of a movie I really like, I'll get the 4K of it. Yep. And that one, I feel like, okay, going from Blu-ray to the 4K Blu-ray, that one, I'm like, yeah, you kind of, if you have them side by side, you'll tell the difference, but it's still like, there's more color depth and stuff in the 4K Blu-ray, but we went on a tangent. I'm sorry. Let's talk about the game.
We can wrap this into the game itself. When you create games, like, what's your preferred? Like, do you like going into high quality stuff, or do you like the little 2-bit kind of things?
So honestly, for me, what I'm most attracted to is aesthetic. I think composition is much more important than the sort of resolution and the technical. I really appreciate all the technical aspects, and I love, you know, people like John Carmack who are always pushing, you know, whether it's like mega textures, this is like 8 years, 10 years ago, whatever, but like whatever the new tech is, you know, obviously we've kind of been split in all these different directions with VR and you know, there's so many new emerging technologies and the industry is being pulled in all these interesting ideas and different directions. But for me, I always come back to, and I think one of my big gripes for the industry in general is that we've kind of gotten stagnant. I think the graphics have kind of plateaued. Speaking of the difference between the enthusiasts can tell the difference between the HD and you know, the 4K and you know, like, I mean, the 8K is insane. Like, I don't even, I can't tell the difference there, honestly, at least how it's set up in Best Buy.
No one's going to get set up in 8K. Like, I feel like most games don't even hit 4K or even 1080p. I feel like a lot of them.
No, it's
we'll do 900p or something, and then just like dynamic resolution and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm always more interested in the art direction side of things and trying to find a unique language for your game. And in our case, in Romancevania, like you know, we're drawing on all kinds of different inspirations. But for me, you know, we're drawing a lot of like from Disney and the sort of romantic elements from Disney films and, you know, Beauty and the Beast and that kind of thing. But then also one of the biggest touchstones for me is like horror theme parks and the sort of, you know, the game is about a reality dating show. You play as Dracula. Imagine if Dracula was the star of The Bachelor, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the cool things about that premise is that, you know, games spend all of this time trying to avoid or hide the artifice, right? If you look at stage, you look at theater, and they're not afraid to dim the house lights and then like bring up the, you know, the spotlights in a very, you know, like very particular, specific and intentional way. Whereas games are always like, they try and source it. They try and be like, oh, someone flipped a switch off and oh, there you can hear them running away or whatever. Like, they really try and ground everything. We're just saying like, it's a show. It's going to be over the top. There's going to be a lot of jazz hands and pizzazz and that kind of thing. And so, the notion of like horror theme parks, yeah, everyone talks about Disney World and how that's very much like a level, like level design, very much borrowing from a lot of what happens in Disney World.
You know,
similarly,
Danny has a horror story from Disney World where they got stuck at the airport.
Oh, no, it wasn't just that. I think it started. It started with getting stuck on Haunted Mansion ride. That's what we got stuck in the graveyard. The day before we had to fly back, we go to fly back. They push back our plane 8 times. And then they're like, so we don't have a captain. So they're looking for a captain. And they finally find a captain. We're like, hey, got a captain. However, we don't have a co-pilot. So then they spent another 2 hours finding a co-pilot. And then they finally canceled it. And then we stood in line from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. because all the other people on the plane, like we were all in a line trying to get things fixed. They got there before us. So the planes that took off prior to, at this point, it is Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday at this point. The next flight would have been Wednesday and then another one Thursday. Wednesday completely filled up. And we got put on standby for Thursday. Otherwise, we had to be there till Saturday for the next flight back. We spent a night in the airport. We made a bed out of these like couches that we found.
And, I did the same thing when I was slept in the airport.
And my parents hotwired us like money pretty much to go to a really sketchy hotel to at least sleep in a nice bed.
A hotel that didn't accept MasterCard.
And I almost got fired from my job.
That is pure chaos.
That's awful.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it.
They blamed it, even though I called them every single day, letting them know like what's going on. They still marked it as a no-call, no-show. So I have like 3 markups or something like that. So if I get like 1 actual markup, I'm fired.
The company sucks.
The company's horrible, and I...
Yeah.
I'm looking other places.
We can't disclose what it is, but yeah.
We'll,
if we're not recording, then it'll just be like, it's this one, and they're terrible. But so with Romancevania, were you just watching The Bachelor, and you were just thinking to yourself, like, should I...
what if this was Dracula?
What if they could just... be vampires.
Pretty close.
Actually, the other way around. We were Symphony of the Night.
Oh.
Bill and I have been together almost 23 years. And one of the things that we do. I know. We're
23
so
years.
Yeah.
I was thinking you were like, I mean, then again, you could be like.
26.
I found him in preschool.
I was like, because I've been like, oh, if they're like, you know, because we're in our Danny's like 28, 29, and then
28.
Cass and I are in our 30s. So I've been like, oh, you guys known each other since you were kids, and you like, oh, but then it's like,
I know.
Still,
We're in our 40s. It's fine. You can life goes on in your 40s. I actually love being in my 40s. It's great.
You're in your 40s and you have kids and you guys look great. So
thank you.
Thank you.
There's hope. No,
here's that $20. I promise you.
No, we're very fortunate. We, you know, like a lot of things going for us. We're very lucky with our family and like we're making games. Like
it keeps you young.
There's got to be somebody.
I feel like from what I hear, the horror stories of game development, I feel like you would do the opposite. Like they showed the guy that from CD Projekt Red. They showed the progress of like when Cyberpunk started.
Oh, I know.
And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like being the president.
I know, right? No. So listen, we busted our butts on this thing. I've never worked harder, and I've done a lot of crunching, and on this one, it's like we don't do it as a company, but you know, like we're tiny, right? But for me, I've always done it because like I got to get it right, and so you know the whole blood, sweat, and tears thing. But I try never to lose sight of the fact that holy shit, we're creating magic. And you know, this is something I've always wanted to do from when I was, you know, 8 years old, sending in stupid design documents to Nintendo. Like that's,
did they ever pick them up?
Well,
Breath of the Wild. That was me.
You need to hear the story.
I'll be quick. You know me in tangents, but, so when I was, it was actually more like 9 or 10. I wanted to make games. I was like the kid on the playground where all the kids would be like, you know, the kids that you think are into Nintendo and into video games, you know, I would go and talk to them and they'd be like, okay, that's enough. Shut up. That's I don't want to hear about games anymore. Bored. Obsessed. And, you know, I wanted to not only play them, but I wanted to make them. And so I started drawing all these designs and creating all these characters. And eventually I wrote up this design doc for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which was my favorite movie at the time. And I put it together. It was like, I don't know, it was maybe like 10 pages, and wrote a little letter to Nintendo and sent it to the Nintendo Fun Club, right? It was this tiny little magazine, which I could have a stack of them over there, but I could show you. And I sent it in, and I don't know, some months later, they sent me it was basically a form letter, but it was from Carla F. Stricker. And she said, oh, you know, dear BG, I went by BJ. Don't ask why. but it's like, oh, we received your idea, and you'll be pleased to know that your game, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, is being made by Mindscape. It's this company, like Palo Alto or something like that. And they gave me the address and the telephone number, if you can believe that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit, they like my idea. This is amazing. I'm a legend. So I immediately get on the phone and I call Mindscape. And I'm
when
like,
are we starting?
Hey, I'm calling about Indiana Jones. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So like, what's the deal with this? I had sent all the ideas and they're like, what's going on? What's happening right now? And I was like, yeah. And you know, you get this weird, like, they don't know what I'm talking about. I was like, yeah, what, like, how do I?
You're making my game.
And I was like, this close to being like, do you know who I am?
I submitted the letter that Nintendo told
exactly.
me.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously, you know, being a 10-year-old kid, you don't know that they're like, oh, they meant coincidentally, this company is making that game. Yeah. But anyway, that fueled all of this creativity. I didn't quite get the message. I didn't get the memo. And so I started to send in ideas constantly. And eventually they're like, yeah, we can't do this. Legally, we can't do this. But one of the ideas I sent in was for Metroid 2.
Okay.
Right? Big
surprise there. And I specifically, and I have the drawings, sent in the idea for the spider ball. And if you've played Metroid, you know that you have that you can curl up into a ball and roll around. And
the morph thing. Ball. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with the morph ball, as I had the idea of as an add-on, you could be encased in this gel, which would allow you to in the morph ball, like ride on ceilings and floors and you know, basically go upside down like a spider. And I sent that in and they're like, hey, legally, we can't take any of your ideas. Get lost, kid. And then like, I don't know, a year or two later, when it came out, they had the spider ball, and I was like, what?
Bastards.
Yeah. It's like, obviously they didn't see it. It's like, but convergent design, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
There you go. So that got me started making games.
Nice.
What was the first game that you worked on? I don't know if we went over that, but I mean, we're going to go over it again anyway, because
perpetually,
no one probably even listened to the episode that we did before. So
somebody did.
Somebody out there did. I would like to think.
Do you mean the first game I worked on, not using crayons? I mean, as a professional?
Yeah, like one that, yeah. Like an actual
one you got retail release.
Yeah, so the first one that I was a designer on was a game called SWAT 4. So it was a beloved franchise where it's like a special weapons and tactics game where you, it's a shooter, and it's all just like they have a multiplayer component, but it's also about, you know, close quarters combat. It's just like, you know, clearing buildings and that kind of thing and saving hostages. So that was a great project for me because I got to learn a lot about the process. It was we had a very clear template laid out before us, and we had all these ideas. Like we wanted to get going on BioShock. Like we all wanted to do this spiritual successor to System Shock 2. But at the time, nobody gave a shit. Nobody wanted anything to do with that franchise because it didn't sell that well. And so we started working on this thing. And mind you, before that, I'd been at the company for a couple of years before that. I came on to work on this doomed project as a tester. It was a project that was kind of like Silent Hill meets Legend of Zelda, I guess you could say. So you take those two flavors and you throw them together. It was pretty neat, but it was marred by all kinds of technical problems and legal problems. And just like, anyway, it was doomed, and we finished it, and I didn't realize it. And it was a tough lesson to learn, but I didn't realize it until basically we finished the game. They're like, people like, yeah, this game's not coming out. What are you doing? Like, we're only doing it because we're legally obligated. And like, you know, frankly, it's not that good. And I was just like, yeah. But anyway, I got my foot in the door that way. And yeah, so SWAT 4 was the first one. And then right after that, basically right onto BioShock.
What a leap. SWAT 4, I mean, SWAT 4 did pretty well, at least to my knowledge that it did. Yeah. And especially for like, it was kind of niche at the time. Yeah. Like, I think it was before Rainbow Six, like really started taking off, or it was around that like same time. But I felt like with SWAT 4, there was a lot more like realistic campaigns and stuff. I think you were actually going into like crime scenes and things. And a lot of it, people found it shocking at the time. And then with BioShock of being like a phenomenon, like that must have been like a huge, you go into like game stores and you still see the Big Daddy just like there. And that must be like, so I made that.
I have an entire shelf of BioShock, like
amazing
collectibles.
That's amazing.
And,
thank you.
Yeah. Cause I used to go to like MAGFest and Too Many Games and those different conventions. And
don't you have the Funko Pop of the Big Daddy and Little Sister?
I think I have the Big Daddy.
Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, that means a lot. It was wild. You know, we were this company that did all these critical darling games, and you know, we frankly wanted to work on BioShock. We had all kinds of different prototypes and had experimented, but we took it out on the road and chopped it around, and no publisher under the sun wanted anything to do with it. And it's all about the track record, and you know, we get a lot of like companies being like, "Hey, we love you guys, we love your work, but that franchise is dead." You know, like nobody gives a shit about System Shock. And actually, it's funny the way we got that to happen. You know, Ken Levine, the creative director, brilliant guy. We were all like, he kept asking us, like, "Yes, really want to do this?" Like, you know, we got bit by this before, and we can't do the critical darling thing anymore. We gotta do this. You know, we gotta try and make it. And we all pressured him, and finally, he was like, "Okay, cool." So he had this idea that he would pitch someone in the press the idea of like, "Hey, you're a really big System Shock 2 fan." And we actually went to GameSpot for this. And we knew a particular writer there was a huge System Shock 2 fan. It was like, "Hey, do us a favor. You love System Shock 2. How about we do like work something out where we do a retrospective on that series? And then we can do, here's the spiritual successor to that. We'll give you the exclusive rights to that story." And we basically went all in on the idea, like, if we can get enough eyes on this thing, we'll generate all this hype. Again, this is pre-social media. That didn't exist. Yeah. It's pre-YouTube. I'm that much of a dinosaur. And so we showed him this whole retrospective on System Shock, did all these interviews. And then we showed them, basically, it was like a one-room demo based on the SWAT 4 engine. It was like, we basically took a SWAT 4 level. It's like a room, actually. It's a couple of rooms. And just really dirtied it up, made it very labby. We created these, like, Bacta tanks, you know, this filled with all this goo. And we created this little slug bug monster, and we splattered all over the place. And we literally did some concept art, created this one room, and then just did a whole lot of razzle dazzle, or Ken did anyway, and talked about our ideas. And at the time, it was like, the idea was, it was a Nazi installation at the bottom of the sea, who was doing all this experimentation with, you know, human genome and this kind of thing. And you're coming in after the fact, and very different game, but we pitched it. And, you know, we basically, I think within a few hours of the story going live, we started to get these calls, from pubs, being like, hey, what's going on with that? Tell us more about this game, because the numbers were tracking. There was actual interest. Mm-hmm. And so we basically went all in on this concept, and just saying, hey, we're going to bank on proving that there's interest out there, because there's no other way to do it. You can't go out and get likes. You can't get social media. You can't get any sort of cred. So we just had to get some outlet to say, like, hey, this is awesome, and get eyes on the thing.
Yeah.
So it was this close to not happening.
That's crazy to think. Like, there's a lot of films that are like that too. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I'm sure someone would just be like, oh yeah, like this one and this one. I mean, even games in general, like, there's so many canceled projects and stuff. There's a lot of YouTube videos just about, like, we found the build for this game. Like, I doubt that you would, but if you had that build for that canceled game that you worked on, like, I think like, there's some, like, game preservation stuff that would love to just see what the hell it is. And, like, I don't know. I don't know, like, the legal stipulations and stuff for that. But, like, I think with BioShock Infinite, I think there was a, like, it changed.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Like, a huge amount.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is sort of the normal iteration, but I mean, there were some pretty big kind of reboots. I mean, like, some jerk publicly released a lot of the stuff about the multiplayer and that kind of thing. Like, you know, I don't need to talk about that, but, we did publicly talk about how it was a lot more, I guess you could say, it had sort of an art nouveau. It was very ornate, very baroque, very European, and it was murky and, like, super high contrast. And it was a lot closer to the original BioShock.
Yeah.
It's still in the clouds and that whole thing.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that. And then when I saw the Americana version, I was like, this looks very different.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to that, but, you know, Ken was always, he's gotta kick it up a notch, you know. It's like, I don't like to speak for him at all, but, you know, what's the point of doing something, you know, you're gonna spend 3 or more years of your life working on something, if you're not gonna be like, hey, we shook it up, we pushed ourselves, we innovated. Mm-hmm. You gotta love the thing, that's the first thing, but it's also like, you want to feel like it had a purpose. Mm-hmm. You feel like you move things along. And I think there was a lot of, as cool as it was, and I think a lot of fans would have loved it for sure. You don't want to kind of try, and this is my big gripe with the industry right now, is a lot of sameness. There's a lot of, like, we're stuck in, I think culturally, we're, like, in a really bad spot. I think it's just that sort of remaster and rehash, and, like, the between the sort of paint by numbers or you know, create by corporate board, and just sort of, like, it's almost like everyone's afraid of the AI art. Yeah. It's a whole separate discussion, but honestly, we're already there, you know. A lot of what's being created, I don't mean the art, like artists actually drawing stuff, but I mean, you talk about movies and TV, and that's so sanitized and corporatized and focus tested, and it's just like, it's a machine. It's always been a machine, but it's more of a machine than ever. And I think games have really fallen into that trap now, and the indie space is great, but you're starting to see things retract quite a bit more into, you see these tendrils pop out, but for the most part, it's all retracting into a lot of sameness. But particularly the remaster culture that we have, the re-release, and it's not healthy. It's not good. We're kind of stagnant.
I think there was a remastered of BioShock, and I think they kind of messed up on it too, where for me, like if I tried to play like Bioshock 2, it would just crash constantly. And I'm like, this really? Is this is not, but then again, that was like a different studio at the time. That was
Blind Squirrel, I think.
Yeah, so I was thinking like who made the like the actual
I'm sorry, yeah. That was 2K Marin. Yeah, it was a good group, super talented group. You know, they had some real talent come out of there, and they put together a really great crew. But
Arkane Studios, they also helped on it. That's what I
was thinking. I think they a little bit. Yeah, so I mean, it's tight time frame on that thing. You know, you got to basically pull all hands on deck, and I think you know, 2K got as much help as they could, and it turned out really well. But yeah, that remaster, like, you know, I've only played it for like an hour. I got too frustrated. It's like, just, you get too precious about stuff, and you're looking at it, it's like, wait, like, just walking around the first few rooms, I was like, why did you change? What are you doing? Why did you change this? Like, there's no need for that. And this is, anyway, get really precious about it.
Like, didn't they announce or something that they were making like another Bioshock game?
Yep.
But it's none of the people that have worked on Bioshock.
Yeah. There's apparently a show coming.
That's the word. But they've been, there's constantly been.
I think Netflix is the one doing that because Netflix loves doing that.
Yeah,
that's the
rumor.
Yeah.
I would love to see a show. A movie.
If we could get The Last of Us kind of adaptation,
Del Toro. But
The Last of Us is.
Do you have a dream for that? Like, do you guys dream that maybe one of your games will be made into like take off so hard that it'll be made either a movie or a show or something?
No, we specifically designed this and every inch of it was about, you know, trying to make it so that we could eventually turn this
off. Like we believe in the IP and we feel like the IP can do a lot of things.
And so, you know, we spend quite a bit of time, and like, this is we really, not to toot our own horn here, but like we really did build a universe. Like we hit way out of our weight class on this thing. And we have a variety of metrics to make sure that, you know, every space is lived in, every space is believable and has a history, and every character, you know, not only has the usual quirks and whatnot, but these are beings that have been around for millennia. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that a little
bit? The script is 500 pages long. It is a deep game. There are 75 different dates. Like, it's just,
wow. I thought you were going to say bosses, and I was like, Jesus.
Oh, no, no. But the bosses are hilarious. I think we have the most interesting and weird bosses in any video game, and
I just want to say, when I was delving in on the game, I'm in love with, like, PSL, I think it is.
PSL, yeah.
Yeah. I am in love with it.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, the thing is, when you get to know every one of the characters, I mean, PSL is, I think, the standout. She's quirky and fun. You want to talk about how you came up with that?
Yeah, so I am a basic bitch in the fall. Like, I love my little PSLs. Like, I go, I get pumpkin spice latte on the daily. It's my favorite. I don't even drink coffee, but I love pumpkin spice lattes. So one day we're concepting characters, and I came home with my little pumpkin spice latte, and I'm just happily, joyfully sitting on my pumpkin spice latte, and I was like, let's make like a little pumpkin witch. Like, she's made of pumpkins, and I'm just like drinking it.
Is that the one with the big pumpkin boobs?
And I was like, yes. She's got little pumpkin boobs, and maybe she's like a scarecrow, so she's like on a thing. And I'm like, oh, maybe she's kinky. Maybe she likes being on that thing. And And after like 15 minutes of people being like, Amanda's finally lost it, hasn't she? We got our concept artist Reiko Murakami on it, and like 15 minutes later, we were like, oh, shit, yes,
yeah.
I see future cosplays of that, like, absolutely.
That's
will not lie, when I saw that, I'm like, I have most of that outfit goals, and I have a lot of body paint, I just need fake boobs, but I can do that.
Yeah, well, you'll be pleased to know that again, a lot of this was designed with these things in mind, because, you know, there's, When you release our art book, the amount of iteration on these characters and then revisiting them after we made some changes to their backstory and the way they interact with Drac, and again, there's such depth there. But with all this work, we're like, you know what? Some of these characters are really hitting, we should do cosplay turnarounds for each of these characters. And so 2124, our publisher, was like, totally like, oh, absolutely. You know, Amy, on the marketing side was like, she's actually a cosplayer herself. And, so she guided us through that process of creating, you know, different poses and characters. And so we're putting together at least basic guides to help with that, because yeah, no, these characters are like, just the amount of like, we never really talk about it, but for me, like cosplay wise, like I think we talk about PSL a lot because that's like, that's in your face, but I mean, talk about Alessa's shoes for a second, right?
Gorgeous.
Who's the one who designed the actual shoes?
I don't know who did the shoes, but when we were concepting all the characters, so like we're actually, we don't cosplay, but we're big cosplay fans.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
PAX East is right in our backyard. And our favorite thing when we're at PAX, other than playing games, is what are people wearing? Like, who are they dressing as? Blah, blah, blah. So as we were concepting every single character, we would stop and be like, wait, how would cosplayers think about this? Should we change this? Yeah. Should we tweak that? Like, we actually genuinely did character models with cosplay in mind, because we really wanted this game to be heavily cosplayable, because God, like, who doesn't love looking at that? Like, it's just amazing. I just love it. I love it.
So. I think because I'm curious to see what you think, but you know, when you jump into the world, you know, listen, when you're a creator, everything is precious, and you know, it's like your baby, but I mean, there's a lot here. There's like
a lot to work with.
Well, yeah. And so like another example would be that, because we knew the PS, well, we didn't know, but we suspected PSL would be like, get that reaction because it's so freaking cool. But some characters we didn't write off, but I did not expect Fenton or Fancy Man Wolf, for example.
Oh my God.
Like, people are really, like, really vibing.
Internet has been
Yeah. And that's awesome. Like,
turnout with that is, especially with this coming out, Beastars became a huge thing, and everybody's in love with
anime.
The wolf.
It's a 3D anime series.
It's a 3D anime series, and that specific thing shot off many people, like, being into animals. I also really like his design. Like,
thank you.
The whole thing. I think those are moons.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing.
So,
You would say meet him though. I mean, like, PSL, like, Amanda loves PSL because of the puns. We all do, but when you hear her talking, that kind of, also a little filthy the way she talks. But
she's filthy.
A lot of puns. In a clean way, this is not we have a saying on the team, it's not even not dirty. Like, this is like, fun and tongue-in-cheek.
Like, a lot of what she says is bleeped out, and then it makes it kind of like more hilarious. Yeah. So
but Fenton, you always say, is your BFF, because, and again, when you meet the character, you're like, wow, there's a lot here. So yeah, he's got a thing for cheese, got a thing for the finer things in life. Yeah,
so. Books and cheese. Well, so one of my big things is like, In games, I want to be able to make friends. I don't want to just have to romance everybody. I want to be able to just have, like, pals. Yeah. So in Romancevania, if you're not, like, attracted to somebody, you can either vote them off or just have friendly conversations with them. And, like, some of them can really bro down and, like, be good friends. Like, Fenton, I never romance Fenton because I just want to talk about cheese and books with him. And that's fine. I basically wrote him to be my furry best friend. Right?
Sounds like a good time, honestly.
Have a cup of tea.
Was the conversation aspect, because I know you guys were working on the game during like the pandemic. Was that part of it where it was like, I really just need to talk to somebody. I'll just need someone to talk to.
No, not really. It mainly came from, so I had a number of frustrations with some games that I really love. So, and I say this with a lot of love. I love the BioWare games. I love Dragon Age. I love Mass Effect, but I don't love that I can't date whoever I want, right? Like, I don't love that they restrict by gender. I hate that.
Yeah.
It pisses me off. I love Persona 5 with a burning passion of 1,000 suns, but I don't like that I can't date the boys. I want to date the boys. Like, why won't you let me do this?
And it's these guys are probably gay. Like, come on. Like Ryuji is like, come on.
Oh my God. getting me all worked up. But I just wish that I could treat characters in games the way my instincts would want to. So like, I want mm-hmm. you're my friend, you're my enemy, you're my hookup. You know, like I want to be able to do that. And so in Romancevania, you can have really great frenemy conversations. You can have, you know, like, so we player choice is so important to us. So yeah, you can pick Drak's body. You can pick whoever you want to date. Everybody's down for it. Or you could just befriend, you know, a lot of characters. Or if you're not into somebody, no big deal. You can get rid of them at the first elimination, you know, the second elimination.
Romance everybody?
Yeah.
Like, you can only you ultimately because it is, you know, a game show,
yeah.
You do ultimately end up with two final big dates, you know, like the way they do on those dating shows, and then ultimately you do have to pick one. So you could theoretically befriend everybody, but you need a certain level to sort of get to the final dates.
Final date, but a lot of side hustles.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. You can, but and here's another good thing: they don't get jealous.
Nice.
You know, I feel like we have very open-minded monsters.
It's polyamorous dream.
I was really hoping you'd get a little trashy, kind of like how The Bachelor and stuff gets, where people yelling at each other and throwing shit at each other.
Yeah, so that you're tuning into exactly where, absolutely. So we do have these things called house dramas, where at various points throughout the game, depending on who's in the show, because again, if you vote someone off, this is why one of the game is like, I think, one of the most replayable, certainly. We don't call it a Metroidvania, but there are Metroidvania. It's more of like an action platformer.
It's more of like a Romancevania, if you will.
Yeah. So, if you voted a character off, or if you haven't voted the characters off at certain points, these characters behind the scenes will clash, and you'll be able to see a behind the scenes like dialogue and a bit of a tiff,
a cat fight.
Yeah, and then at the end of that, you get to decide who you side with. So, let's say, for example, Fenton at one point has a knockdown drag out with Soul,
yeah.
the sort of your rival vampire, and they're going at it. And at the end of the conversation, you're like, who do you want to score brownie points with and side with? And so,
what I meant by the jealousy thing was, it's not that other characters are going to be like, you just went on a date with so-and-so, you're exclusively with me. It's more that like, no, we've got the reality petty show drama, but it's not that you're going to have negative repercussions if you I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to say about Persona, one of the things that I didn't like was that you couldn't break up with somebody. So if you ended up romancing somebody, you're stuck with them.
See, I wanted Anne to Kamaki from the beginning. Went with it.
I did Kawakami, the teacher, and I'm like, I was like, this is wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. but like the stat stuff that she helps you with, like where you can still do activities and stuff, I'm like, that's the aspect that I want. And also, I was like, but then I'm like, it's a high school student. He shouldn't be dating his teacher. This is wrong.
I actually never even got her. I didn't pick up the phone when I was supposed to pick up the phone. And
you absolutely, okay. Cause like what she does is she massages you, and then you're able to go out at night. So like when Morgana is telling you, like, you need to go to bed, you get a massage from her, and then you can go and do stuff still.
That can max out so many things. I want to restart the game.
No, you don't.
Oh, no. I have a life.
I've played through that game twice now. I played the original one, and then I played Royal well. And I got the platinum on Royal because I'm like, I'm going to get it. Why not? And 100 hours later, like, why did I play this again? Yeah. I mean, all the new stuff they added, though, was really awesome. But I was thinking that I'm hoping that in like Persona 6, whenever that decides to materialize, I'm hoping that they have like a breakup mechanic, because I was thinking like you break up with someone and it could have like a glass cannon kind of thing to it, where it could do something really good, but it also hinders you a lot too. So if they're in your party and doing something like that, but I didn't have anybody to tell that to. So I'm like, I'll just tell it to you guys. Why not?
No, that's cool.
I thought that would be a cool idea.
No, I think, listen, this is a tricky balancing act to figure out how, because we've battled with this a long time about trying to balance the just the pure, like, how do I feel about this character and what is my relationship with them, with the drive to have gameplay benefits to having them around. And so, for example, with Medusa, right? Everyone knows Medusa. Mm-hmm. When you first meet her, she's just a head because Perseus, did what he did. And so, her head is on a statue. But conveniently enough, you by meeting her, you're able to unlock the power. Any Street Fighter fans, you unlock Hadouken, right?
Okay. Oh, Hadouken, nice.
But it's nice. Head. Do get the pun? Head.
Head.
Flies across the screen and it turns enemies into stone. So, really cool stuff. And obviously, keeping her around means you can upgrade that power. So, you know, we were very like, that one's an obvious one. Like, you got to be like, if you have that power, and she's on the show, you got to be able to upgrade that. But then you get into this whole thing about like, okay, what are the other powers that you get? And we tried to thematically, because there's a lot of upgrading. It's not like an incredibly intense Persona style RPG where there's a million things to pick up and that kind of thing.
No, but it makes you make decisions. I never eliminate Brosifer because I get such great cash benefits.
Right.
From having gross fur around, and like things are cheaper and I can level up a little bit fat. Yeah. Like, oh, I got to keep gross fur around because of those. And, and then other characters, it's like, oh, well, I get crystals so much easier if I have her. And so it's complicated. So
you were saying before, meaningful choice. And it's not only about the relationships. We did try and have some, obviously you want to tie the gameplay into that.
Friends with benefits.
Yeah. And so it's been a lot of fun, but your idea there about the glass cannon thing is very cool. But it's a tough balancing act.
Because
you don't want to make people making decisions based on the numbers, looking at it and be like, I know that's not what you're proposing, but character. So you want to just sort of have these little like, I'm torn between these two characters. And I also like Hadouken a lot. So you're staying, just to have those little additional,
because
you said it best, benefits.
I feel like with, because like when we were talking about like games getting into a rut, I feel like a lot of them do the games as a service thing where every time I play a game like that, and I think Danny and Cass and I have played a few too, like we play like Destiny and stuff, but I never look at the stats. I just see like this one changes your number to a bigger number and I go, and then you end up with just like the dumbest looking armor set. Like, why did I do this? I did that. Speaking of, like, we were talking about BioWare, I played Anthem. I got the platinum on that too, and I don't know why. I put on a podcast and just, I guess I'll just fly around and shoot stuff. I could have been using my time better. My friend was like, why didn't you just play like Monster Hunter? It's a better game, and you just grind nonstop for that. And they're like, I'm like, I don't know.
Monster Hunter.
I played Monster Babylon's Fall, and no one played that. So
nice. No, I mean, that's definitely one of the problems there. And listen, people enjoy it. That's what matters. What I see is a lot of people not enjoying it, and these things continue. You know, so it's like, I don't like, obviously the business side of things seem to be working, but my sort of plea to gamers and to fans and that kind of thing is like, if you don't like that, then listen, we're looking at hundreds of games a day, a week on Steam. It's like, we gotta broaden our diet a little bit, I guess, you know. And we're lucky enough to be, we're occupying a strange space where we're not, there's a lot of indie out there. There's a lot of like indie, and we're small, like we're working out of our basement here, but you know, we have 2124.
It's a nice basement, though. It's a podcast, so like, people listening, it's like, no, this is a really nice basement. So,
thank you. We're in an interesting time where I think nobody's particularly, a lot of people aren't particularly happy with the state of things, but the thing is, we have the tools to combat that, to be like, you know, to get out there and find the new stuff, right? I mean, as avid, you know, film fanatics, I mean, how much do you all dip into like the indie space there, or like what are you
most funny you say that the work? So we're going to record an episode after this, like immediately after.
Oh, yeah?
We're gonna talk about the movie Skinamarink.
Oh, yeah, I know nothing about.
Yeah.
And it's going to be one of, so you obviously seen it?
We have seen it. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I have to give them credit. I mean, we try not to like talk about it before the episodes. That way we just get our immediate reactions. And sure. Also, like, we don't repeat or forget to say something. Yep. One thing I hand them is their budget was $15,000, and so far they have made $2 million off it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. Good for them.
That's amazing. Good for them.
I heard it was $10,000, so like, yeah, that's insane. But yeah, they got picked up by Shudder to stream on there. So yeah,
love it. Yeah, I know it's wild to see stuff so take off cool. like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, horror is a great space for that. Like, I love that, and I think that the fans in particular, like, mm-hmm. I feel like there's no more supportive group in terms of like rising up the underdog than horror. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's like.
Yeah.
I mean, time and again, it's just like you got these mm-hmm. films that are like, obviously there's Blair Witch, there's a million examples of this kind of, mm-hmm. but even look at something like The Ring, which mm-hmm. relatively speaking was a small budget. I don't know what it was. I'm just going to pull a number out of nowhere, but you know, just to watch that break 100 mil back in the day and just crush it being number one and that kind of thing where it's just like,
yeah, especially there's a lot of magic based off of a Japanese film, Ringu.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you watch that, the budget for that was even less. Yeah. And you're like, they got it from this? Mm-hmm. Like, yep. I was expecting it to be like really scary because some people they'll think like, oh, Japanese horror is like the pinnacle of horror. And I'm like, no, trust me, there's some garbage out there. Every country has their garbage.
I definitely think out of all the countries, Japanese and Korean movies, when it comes to horror, definitely like top tier. But of course, they got some low tier out of there. We've watched them.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's interesting to watch the way that I think horror is such a, speaking generally here, it's such a culturally horror, or they are so well suited for horror, just given the way that it's such a emphasis on sort of minimalism and focus mm-hmm. and the craft and that kind of thing. Like, any of you been to Japan?
No.
The next year and a half, I believe I should be. Yeah,
you got to do it.
Yeah, we've gone twice. It's our favorite place in the whole world.
Yeah,
really?
Yes.
I thought it was with me
more than this basement.
yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It's just like it's just a
well, it's like going to the
different world.
It's like going to the future. Well, it is so clean and so beautiful and so efficient that you're like, where are the robots? Like,
I just love I just love the attention to detail and the cleanliness is part of that. But more than anything else, it's just like the amount of pride in pretty much everything.
Yeah,
is just and so you like I just from a film perspective, it seems like even like with baseball, like we went to a few baseball games.
That was crazy.
The focus on the mechanics and like the craft of that, and like whether it's the food, the music, it's just like and so. Just this real fine appreciation for the details. And that's what horror is, right? Horror is all about that painstaking detail of timing and lighting and framing and
blood.
That's very cool.
That's what I enjoy seeing. We watch a lot of movies, and it gets to a point where things get so predictable. Like, you'll know something will happen, like they're going to say something. So it's nice when you get those like random films that take the second to identify a little detail, even if it has like the same talk path, but that little detail changes everything else and makes it way more interesting. So if you're making stuff, pay attention to details.
We'll do like some specialty shows. I mean, lately, because it seems to do like best like algorithm. I don't really know if it actually does. We like doing the themes now. We were like, I think the first theme we did was, so I hate the term elevated horror because it makes it sound very like gatekeeping. I don't know if you've heard that before, where it's like these are horror movies that are
like highbrow.
Mm-hmm. These are it's like the criterion of
horror films. Let me guess, Heredity and whatnot.
Hereditary, Midsommar, Babadook, I guess like more recently, like Bones and All would kind of fit into that. Which
Babadook is like top tier on that whole list you just said. But, Babadook is so fantastic. People
gay icon. Babadook.
Yeah. So they'll call it elevated horror. So I thought it'd be funny that we do elevator horror. Ooh. And watch
The Shining, obviously.
So we found four films that center around a haunted elevator.
Yes.
Well, found four.
So what is it? The 13th floor is not an elevator. What are they? Hold on a second. Is the one with the horrifying story?
The
give
lift.
Give me 1 second.
In LA with the water tower. Is that one of them?
The lift.
Yeah, we
watched two lifts.
Yeah,
we watched the Italian
he's Dutch. Director's name is Dick Moss. We've watched like five of his movies so far. We call him Dick Mass because it's funnier, but so he made a movie in the 80s called The Lift. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar giallo Italian horror style, but it's Dutch filmmaker, but where they just dub over it with whatever language whenever they sent it out to whoever. It wasn't very good, but he remade the movie, and it has Naomi Watts in it, who was in Mulholland Drive.
The Lift Down, which is the same thing.
Yeah, those were the same movies.
Ascending are also Ascending or Rising Wolf and The End.
Yeah. All of those about elevators.
Yeah.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
No. None of them were worth watching.
No. Oh, there's the pizza.
Oh. I was like, why are you busting up the pizza?
Oh, good looking. That's good looking. Well done, Austin. What if not? All right, Austin.
It took a really long time to get that pizza. I feel like.
Yeah. Look, not a big tip.
Is this alcohol? Whiskey. All right. It's whiskey.
For another time, Danny.
Yeah. Worry about it later.
I'm trying to.
He's just handing me things.
Sure.
But yeah, we honestly, though, we prefer a lot of indie stuff. I mean, like the games that we play together tend to be more indie centric. And I also feel like horror in general, like, is one of the few things that you can go to a theater and still see. It's because it's either superhero movies. Yep. Or a horror movie. Yeah. And I feel like sometimes the horror movies are not.
Or a bear on cocaine.
Oh, I want to see it.
Fun fact, that's actually based off an actual story.
Yep.
I heard that.
Yep, that's wild.
Let's go get some bears high.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's filmed in Ireland.
But yeah, so like we played Sons of the Forest last night, which I believe that's a. So far, it seems fine. We didn't get too far into it, but
yeah. I love Calvin. Calvin is great.
Kelvin. His name's Kelvin. It's on his name.
Is that the character?
You get a helper
NPC
character
that you can just boss around.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He's deaf.
What does he do?
You can just command him to like build a shelter or collect sticks, go make a fire, follow me, stay here, like very simple things.
Cool.
But he just kind of like hangs out with you.
And he's believable as an AI and a companion?
No.
For me, I love him. I will die for Kelvin. He's adorable.
The game's still in early access, so we've experienced some glitches here and there where we're like,
sure. Yeah,
but happens. I mean, the first Forest game was an early access, and it was one of the few early access games that actually finished. So that
that one was super fun.
Yeah, we played.
You
that
guys
one
didn't finish. Well, Justin I sort finished of finished it, that yeah. one on accident. Like, I found the hole way too soon. But I actually like finished.
I love how they were like. There's in the forest, there's a giant hole in the middle of the map, and that's where all the spooky stuff's coming from.
Yeah,
and so my friend and I, we were playing it, and we put on the hacks to be invincible, and we just jumped straight down into the hole, because we were like, all right, we're already gonna ruin the game for ourselves. Let's just jump in and see what's in the hole, because you're not supposed to get in there. But we found a way where you can kind of like shimmy down the walls and Because my friend was like, you're going to die if you go down there. Like, no. I love breaking games. Like, I love watching speedruns and stuff. And I love, like, I wonder if I can go over there. Am I supposed to go over here? And then I jump into, like, the corner of the game and I get stuck. And, like, okay, I wasn't supposed to go there. But I'm glad that I at least got the ability to do it. But yeah, we ended up going into the hole, and then he's like, oh, so this is all the stuff that, because he already played through it and beaten it. He's like, I kind of ruined the game for you. Like, no, I mean, I still enjoyed it. I thought it was cool, but yeah, we kind of did just kind of hop, skip
do it
over, to it.
That's fun though.
There was another thing I wanted to ask about,
sure,
the game. I feel like we said diverging. It was going to be 30 minutes to an hour, and I think we were like,
you know how this goes. Like I said, we're
at an hour.
We talk a lot.
Yeah. Well, because I just wanted to make sure that, like, I wasn't impending. Like,
No, this is great. We're having a good time.
But
learning things, I love that. It's you know, some stuff I hadn't even occurred to me. So the lift series is not worth it. All the elevator stuff.
I mean, it's kind of like when you hear like game reviews and stuff. It's like, yeah, personally, we didn't like them. Sometimes they were funny, but for the most part, it was all right.
I mean, there's like once or twice where we say this movie's absolutely horrible. Don't waste your time. Like, I think we've only done that like once or twice, but otherwise we don't like it. Check it out though.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Turns out we've said it on 50 episodes.
We always try to at least say in the show to just be like, if you were interested in it, check it out for yourself, because you could potentially like it, because everybody's different. And I hate that a lot of people will go online and say a movie sucks or a game sucks and they didn't play it. They just watched some other person. Like when The Last of Us Part 2 came out and people were saying it's the worst game ever made, and they just never played it. And I'm like, because I was falling into that, like, oh, this is one of the worst games you don't want to play. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I don't want to play it. And then I'm like, it's on sale, I'm going to play it. These guys were wrong.
Yeah,
I thought they were. Like, that game, for me, was incredible.
You also need to decipher reviews and whatnot, kind of triangulate. Mm-hmm. Like, ultimately, see what you like. See, I think your approach is good. It's like, if it seems appealing to you, great. But, you know, like, everything is so polarized now, and it's just all kind of needless. It's like, you just got to say, like, okay, consider the source here, consider a source here. What's my interest level? And then based off that, be like, yeah, I'm going to, because there's too many entertainment options right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's stupid. And don't be afraid to walk away.
Yeah.
Too many choices.
I feel like I have too many digital games. So like, they know I have 1500 games on Steam.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's how, every time I look at it, I'm like, I don't want to play any of these. I'll buy digital games on PlayStation as well and the Switch, and I'll go through it. I'm like, I own this. When did I buy this? And I own multiple games on multiple systems. Like, why did I buy it twice or three times?
Yeah, it's almost.
I will buy games multiple times if I really like the title. Like Diablo, I will buy that on every system.
Sure.
Monster Hunter, I will buy that on everything. Yep. Like, if it's good enough, it's worth it.
I got you.
But I don't know why you have so many games. I play Twitch, or I stream games on Twitch, and I have a YouTube where I do game playthroughs, and I do not have that many games.
It's going to be selective too. Sorry, I want to make sure we get to the question. As always.
Because you guys made a game previously, because the first time I talked to you guys were on your first game as Deep In Games. You did Perception. And then Perception Remastered came out.
Yeah, well, so we, you know, it's like small team. So there's always, you always want to do certain things, and it's just like a function of time and resources and that kind of thing. And so after we had released, we're like, hey, there's a laundry list done. And so we basically went through and a lot of rebalancing, a lot of obviously bug fixing, that kind of thing. But we actually re-recorded our lead actress, who's also in this game, was also in Romancevania. We had such a good time
working with quite a few of her. Actually, we're reuniting with
three
writers. Yeah. So, you know, the Richard Orlo played Dr. Breyer and I don't want to spoil anything. Yeah, exactly. But he's Fenton now, and sure, who will be a surprise. Yeah. Angela Morris, she was Cassie. She's now a couple of characters in our game, Alessa and Lyra. Have you seen Lyra? Any like another character? I think
the siren cosplayers are gonna love.
Yeah, Lyra. She's unbelievable. Just like gorgeous.
I've been looking at all the characters. I'm in love with the ice cream unicorn too.
Yes, the candy corn. The unicorn.
Oh, okay. I was like, how does that?
Very tough to cosplay. Yeah.
Yeah, so beautiful.
That creation was Lindsay.
Yeah.
Lindsay. So she always wanted to do a candy corn. The actress that's the actress who played
Medusa.
That's Dolce. Dolce is the candy corn. And the actress also did Medusa and Inez de Castillo, and she's just a phenomenal powerhouse.
She's so talented. Yeah. Like, she took this character in such a weird direction, and we were just like, keep going with it. Keep going with it. Yeah. She was improvised. I mean, she is, like, absolutely hysterical.
We had some specific references in mind, and we didn't mention it to any of the talents. We like to leave a couple things, see what resonates, if there's a connection there. And when she ever started going into her voice, I was like, holy shit. Like, and I was like, hey, just curious, are you using a touchstone here? Is there a reference point? She's like, well, I'm trying to channel a little of this and a little bit of Beetlejuice. And I'm like,
that's it. Shit.
So when you listen to Medusa, in the back of your head, there's a lot of like that kind of same chaos
energy. Yeah.
So it was awesome that read. Because, you know, it's a little bit of Harley Quinn, a little bit of Beetlejuice,
I think Danny's suit thing kind of has like a Beetlejuice.
I did a Beetlejuice body paint before. I like Beetlejuice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Amazing. Wow.
I'll post some of that fun stuff after.
Yeah.
Please do.
Afterwards.
Reworking with a lot of talent. So the remaster, it was an opportunity to go back because we were going to release on the Switch. We were actually the first horror title on the Switch, and it's funny because everyone was like, nobody believed in the Switch. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Like, they released the trailer. I was like, that's going to be enormous. Obviously you don't know how powerful it's going to be or like how well it's going to take off or whatever, but just that concept that they had was like so groundbreaking. And we were lucky enough to, it was around the time when we were finishing up with Perception that I was like, because it had just come out, and a few months before, I reached out to Nintendo. I was like, "Hey, how do I get kits?" And nobody was asking at the time. Well, not nobody, but a few people are. And then it started to sell like gangbusters. They saw Breath of the Wild, and it did really well. And so we had this like, we had people beating down our door, being like, "How did you get in the Switch? How did you get going on that or whatever?" And it's just like, yeah, you see something like I feel like there's a lot of sheeple. No, a lot of like, you kind of have to look in your crystal ball a little bit. And like the Switch was just like, I don't know how you look at that. Same thing with Steam Deck, right? Like obviously there's a lot of similarities there, but I was not a believer. So maybe this is where I'm an idiot. I sort of saw the Switch as being like, this is going to be huge. Whereas the Steam Deck, I kind of wrote off because I think a lot of people look at it and was like, oh yeah, it's like the Switch. But then my son wanted one for Christmas, and we got him one. And I got my hands on it. I was like, oh, my God, this thing's unbelievable. You ever used a Steam Deck? One of these guys right here?
I have never even held it in my hand.
It's an unbelievable piece of hardware. I totally written it off. And I'm actually, it's funny because I'm in the process right now of optimizing. You can't see the game.
No, anyway,
that's
all.
The title screen.
Oh.
I swear it looks good.
It looks good. It's good. There we go. Closer. Nice. Closer.
Yeah. it's a remarkable piece of hardware, and I think that this is probably going to be a huge success as well. Like, it's got a great price point. Hardware is fantastic. And all, not I should say all, but imagine being able to possibly play up to 1,500 games out of the box.
And if you turn their camera, you will see that Gabe Newell is actually holding them at gun.
I know, right? Listen, I don't here's the very intro of the game. Like, we released it as a demo. Like, this is a terrible, terrible demo. So it starts out, the game starts off with, oh my God, this is, however, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yes, put it down.
I know, right?
ooh, we got the inside scoop. We got the first 2 seconds of the game.
There was a public demo on Steam, in October, and the response was just fantastic. People were going bananas, and they got it. And there's always we've all thing, but again, I've had some experiences, right? You never know how things are going to go, and coming from Irrational, where again, Critical Darling, you get all these great games that review really well but didn't sell that well, and then eventually BioShocks, but you carry that trauma with you career. And I've never been more confident in a product. I mean, with BioShock, we were this is gonna be really great, and sure enough. But I mean, this is just so here's the sort of the actual, what the game looks like when you're running around. Yeah, I think I'm going the wrong way. But it's a fantastic piece of, tough to play backwards, piece of hardware.
That's actually the new way of playing games, is playing
upside down backwards. Yeah. So that's the Steam Deck. It's fantastic. And where we're trying to optimize right there. So anyway, so the Switch, we were doing that. We had an opportunity to get some of the stuff that we left on the playing field to tweak. Mm-hmm. And we really made a lot of great improvements. So I was pretty jazzed about that. Right.
Yeah.
That was our remaster.
Nice. What did you feel was the learning aspect of, because I mean, this was your first game, just you guys doing it. Well, I mean, because you have a small team. I couldn't remember how many people that you had. I want to say it was 8 people, maybe.
It's funny because indie, you have people kind of coming and going. You sort of take what resources you can. There's a very big indie community, people who are going in and out of AAA and that kind of thing. And so a lot of people that, Jim
contribute a bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So you work for a few months, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it was mostly, Mano's writing the thing and I'm doing pretty much all of the implementation, all the levels, all that kind of stuff. And Jim is doing all the sound. I got a really good suite of art assets from a couple of artists. But when it came down to it, it was we're doing 75-80% of the work between us, Jim,
John,
and John, John Vasquez. Yeah. I think that we learned quite a bit about scope, but I think one of the biggest challenges, honestly, is to know how to pick your battles. It's a lesson I didn't learn very well because we way overscoped on Romancevania, but somehow through sweat and determination, we were you don't hear about dating sims that have 12 freaking characters and they're all voiced and that have all their million dates and this kind of thing. And then you throw in all the bosses and all the weapons and upgrades and tricks and all I'm particularly proud of how big and diverse the world is. We have so many different regions and they're all fully realized and interesting, and between the Smash
Mountains, tons of enemies,
idyllic fall landscape, sweeping landscapes with pumpkins galore and this kind of thing, and that's where PSL lives, to the real Booty Bay, which is a very salty sea docks kind of area, just so many different areas that are desert. It's an area that's
that's my favorite.
All made of food and sugar and desserts and that kind of thing.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so, I cannot believe, I look back at it, and I think a lot of it was, we had a lot of time. We had a publisher who believed in us. We had a great crew of people, helping out.
Yeah. And we didn't censor ourselves. We just let all the crazy ideas happen. I wrote the most ridiculous jokes and didn't care. We made crazy characters and incredibly stupid and amazing bosses. And I say stupid in a loving way. Yeah. We have an octopus that shoots guns. He's called the Gloctopus.
I love it. I love that.
We didn't cut. We have a tuna that's got these long, sexy legs that does the can-can, and it's the can-can tuna.
Wait, is it the top half is fish and then the bottom? Well, I fucking have that costume!
Oh,
oh,
what? Oh my god.
Yes!
That is a fucking costume that I made it. In like amazing. 7 years ago. That's so awesome.
So you're gonna love this. This is yes. totally your jam. It's, yeah. it's
yes.
It's, yeah, you get the kind of stupid we're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like
we just want to spread joy. That's all.
Yeah, and that's a big and like
it sounds yeah. amazing.
Well, thank you.
We like our dating games here at Apartment Theater, too.
We're all a bunch of monster fuckers. Let's be honest
about it. Like, yeah, and so we're looking up to look at that genre. And there's so many things we love about it, but honestly, there's a lot of frustrations there. And same thing with, again, the Metroidvania. But we're taking all the things that we love and being like, you know what, this other stuff is there traditionally, and it's not necessary. And, you know, for example, like I think that, yeah, you know, it may be just me, but I feel like a lot of dating sims don't necessarily respect my time. You know, I feel like there's a lot of like, it feels like a lot of times they're stretched out, you know, yeah. and it doesn't feel like yeah. it's and so we try, and like there's a shit ton of content in this game, shit ton of conversation, all these mm-hmm. different dates, this kind of thing, but they're all pretty fast paced. Like we have very little patience for media, you know, and it's like we want things to come along. And so, again, a lot of lessons learned, but we're trying to make our own thing here. We're trying to take, we're not beholden by anything. It's like Amanda said, we're not censoring ourselves, but we're also not allowing any of the sort of burdens of the genre that we're trying to mash
up. It was very freeing. Like, no, yeah. we don't want to do that. Yep. This feels good. Like, it was very just like mm-hmm. what feels right.
Yeah.
You know?
So in that sense, it's just, it's a whole different flavor. Yeah. So I'm pretty proud of that.
So it like, if you were to say like gameplay wise though, it is pretty similar to like the other Metroid. It's like other yeah. Metroidvania games, but it has its own.
Yeah. I think that some of the key differences here are that it's, I think a little bit more free form in the combat and the exploration.
Okay.
I think that it starts off relatively linear, fairly linear, I would say. And then by the second or third episode, second episode opens up quite a bit more. You can kind of choose PSL or Alessa, that kind of thing, and choose what direction you're going in. And then it opens up even further. But, you know, I think, and the things I love about the genre is that sense of progression and the sense of growth. And we wanted to take that notion and kind of double down on it by allowing you to be like, no. It's not about having to be a certain level. It's not about having to use a certain tool. It's like, you got all these weapons, you got these tricks, and you got these treats, and you got all these flair and the spells and all these really cool tools. And you know what? In a very Bioshocky way, it's not an emergent sim, but it is one of the core goals. Again, it's about meaningful choice. And mm-hmm. so letting the player be like, yeah, I'm going to use Hadouken a lot. I'm going to use the Impaler to really close the distance on enemies, mm-hmm. and I'm going to finish them off with like a fire crystal, or, you know, so all these different combinations that are really about finding your own form and running with it, you know? So you choose who you're dating with, or who you're going to date, and who you're going to vote off, and that kind of thing. And then you also choose how you're going to approach combat. And if you just want to breeze through it, do that. You know, it's not about crazy intense challenge. It's just about expressing yourself. And then, you know, that was, I think, a very important pillar for us. Let people just, like, you know, have fun. Amanda talks about joy. And we want to minimize the amount of barriers to entry in that, because it's an incredibly replayable game. And the last thing we want to do is be like, oh, no, this is the way you have to play. You have to use this tool here. You have to do this thing here, or you're going to get screwed. No, play it as Femdrak the time. Go through, choose your characters, and but then play through it again. Maybe try Maeldrak and try entirely different powers. Have fun, you know?
Because I know in Symphony of the Night, there's also the 200% yep. where you can flip the castle. And you yep. gotta, is, right. there, is there anything like that? And because you guys are
not so much. Our flip the castle is go back and like go with a completely different cast. There's so many Easter eggs, mm-hmm. so many hidden mm-hmm. things, so many different powers to unlock and that kind of thing. So we felt that was enough. We definitely had a lot of conversations. It's funny because when I first played Symphony, I didn't realize, and I was looking so forward to it because I was always a huge Castlevania fan. I mean, Castlevania is one of the reasons I started making games, the first one. Mm-hmm. But I was so looking forward to it, and I actually didn't eat for like a week because I was saving up to buy it. I was in college at the time. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to just not eat for a week.
That's a terrible idea.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
Well, I mean, I had like the Kraft mac and cheese, just no.
Okay, okay.
And the ramen noodles.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was like, you know, not like, anyway. So, and I was so pissed. I beat the game in like 3 hours, and I was like, went back to the electronics boutique, and I was like, I never do this. It's 3 hours. You said it was like 10. This is bullshit. Like, I never return games. I was so frustrated with this. Got great reviews. It's like, well, what happened? What'd you do? And I explained, I went up and fought Richter, and that was that. It's like, did he have a thing? I was like, what are you thing above his head? I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, okay. He was like, you drew out the castle, and he was like, you, this was the castle? And he was like, yeah. He was like, then you flipped it upside down. It was like, you haven't done this part yet, have you? And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, you gotta go back and do it again. And that's the sort of old school gaming thing. Because I mean, the internet existed. But I mean, I guess GameFAQs, this is 98.
Yeah, by the strategy guide. It was like a lot of JRPGs did that shit too, where you'd be like, where do I go? And then it's like, you'd have no idea. And you'd like, I played
through,
like,
hotline. There were hotlines.
Yeah, you had to call the hotline, especially if you were playing like a Sierra game. It's that stuff was just so vague. You're like, oh, I didn't know to use this with this today. Like,
a lot of that was super obtuse. Like, oh, of course I use an owl on an apple. Yeah. Like, I don't understand why I would do that. Like,
yeah, my internet at the time, or shortly before that, was I worked at Funko Land before that, and there was a Gateway computer store in that strip mall that I was in. So I would walk over to Gateway when I wanted to look something up, and I'd go to IGN.com.
No.
The scroll through and check the guys and that kind of thing. And I'd get, you know, 10 minutes before the salesperson would come over and be like, hey, what you doing there? You going to buy that thing? And I was in there like several times a week, but that was my internet, walking into a Gateway computer store.
Wow.
So dumb.
I remember Gateway computer stores.
I like them. I like that. Right?
I remember those.
I had the worst experience with.
How can cows and computers not be a huge runaway success?
I know. Yeah.
I have a different experience with Gateway. It was like,
oh no.
I got scammed into buying a Gateway computer at Best Buy, and he told me that I could run Crysis on Ultra. I didn't know at the time that it didn't. It felt really silly booting it up, and I could barely even play it on low. And I'm like, monsters. No. I never trusted Best Buy after that. And then I didn't know anything about computer parts. I just knew that it was like, this is better than what I have. And yeah, I ended up just playing World of Warcraft instead, because that's what I was playing at the time. And the computer that I was on before, I was running at like 15 frames a second. And if I went through like Ironforge or Stormwind, it was a slideshow. I'm like, what do I need? I got to get to it immediately and then turn around. Like, if I went to the auction house, I wouldn't.
Oh no.
I wouldn't be able to leave.
Lag city.
But then when I got the new computer, I was playing at 60. I'm like, this is what the game's supposed to be like. This is amazing. Oh my God. And now I'm like, I can't even be. I have a 3070 and I'm like, ray tracing, I don't need it, whatever. I don't know if there's anything else to I feel like we
fuck off. No, I
can't. Wow.
What are you gonna say?
Your Kickstarter is still active, right? That people can still go check out.
Tell where they can find the game. The game's not
where
out
can
yet.
We find you?
Yeah, where?
Yeah, no. So after 3 years of hard work, we're elated to say that it's on Tuesday. Yeah, I know. More than that. That's good math there. March 7th, we're hitting
Flat Circle.
Steam, EGS, PS5, and Xbox Series S and X.
Yeah.
It's been a wild ride. I cannot wait for people to check this thing out. It's like near and dear to us. We've put everything, and so this basement was actually stocked with quite a few more games. And I believe in this project so much that I basically cleaned up my whole game collection. I sold it all. I was like, putting everything I can into this thing, because this thing is going to be awesome. It's going to take off, and I believe in this thing. And, you know, like we're big plans for it. Big plans for the future of this franchise, hopefully. Yeah. And you've been just elated with the reaction so far, right?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's going to continue to be amazing. And I want to watch you all play.
Yeah,
so when you play, tag us so that we can enjoy
it. We'll do an apartment theater.
A live stream, maybe.
Yeah, we'll live stream it.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Love that. Love it. Yeah, we've gotten by both with a Kickstarter and you know, just sort of along the way, we've gotten all these eyes, and it's all just been word of mouth. So we're really grateful for you to give us a shot to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you for coming
and,
back.
Yeah, and hanging out with us.
Coming back into my life. When next time I interview you, I'll be on my next podcast where I'll be doing home cooking, and you guys will be doing your cooking mama game.
Oh my God, I love that game as a kid.
I love that game. Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, mad props for sitting next to that pizza the whole time. I haven't seen you take a bite.
So. Oh yeah, no, he took it away and he left the cupcakes. So there's the cupcakes.
Oh, those look so good.
I got scammed into buying Girl Scout cookies when I went to the grocery store.
So. That is not a scam, sir.
It feels like it. Every time I open that box. I've
been a Girl Scout for 18 years.
And it's like, nice. I get that one sleeve of cookies and I'm like, this is it. This was $5. This wasn't it. But then I bite into it and I'm like, oh, this is delicious.
Yeah, it's worth every penny. Exactly.
So good.
For what they do. Amazing.
Yeah. I guess the other thing too, real quick, I'm hoping, obviously, no matter what, you know, I'm hoping that the game does tremendous. I hope that it does like Hades numbers.
Okay.
Insane.
Put that out there.
Yeah. Like, because
manifest that.
I feel like it has similar elements to Hades with like the friend aspects and things. And
definitely.
I feel like, not the dog super giant, I feel like they sometimes kind of have like an unfair advantage because they also had like Warner Brothers at one point helping them with stuff, and I'm like,
they so again, brilliant game, brilliant series of games. The company does some great stuff, so they've been very smart and a lot of talent there, and I think they've built up a really strong audience, which is what we're trying to do. I'm pretty confident in the work and what we have, so it's just a matter of just, you know, these kind of conversations and spreading the word, because I'm people play it, they're gonna love it, you know.
I think it's gonna be fun to watch people stream it to see what choices they make. Who do you keep? Who do you eliminate? Who do you date? Who do you take on the seafood date? Like a lot of the things, like the dates we have, you could only take a couple characters, so you have to choose really carefully. If you've got eight characters but you can only take two, you know, on the walk through the forest, who are you gonna take? And you know, somebody else is gonna take, I don't know. So I think that those choices make for a very streamable.
I completely
agree. I watched a lot of Markiplier and Jacksepticeye do those games, and I absolutely love, like, just because you'll watch them and be like, all right, I know they did this, so let me not do that and see what happens.
There's definitely a lot of really, I think, key choices, and there's a lot, like I said, a lot of hidden stuff, a lot of stuff for you to discover. And you just never know where the choices are going to take you, you know. So, whereas I think Hades has a lot more systems deep, like I think they you know, say very different genre. And the relationship stuff is really cool. I think we go quite a bit deeper on the relationships.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like, definitely.
And you don't have to beat the game 10 times to get the actual ending, too. Nice.
But no, again, this is where the highlights and the strengths of games come through, because we're so, there's a lot of similarities, you're right. But they're so different, and it's just awesome that we just two completely new sort of subgenres.
Yeah.
You know,
both of them have Medusa in it. So
I know, right? Yeah.
Coincidence.
Yeah.
Medusa's a fan fave.
I'm definitely manifesting Hades numbers. I don't know how many copies of that game has sold, but
I think
I've bought like three copies of that game. So, I mean, I'm manifesting it. I'm at least getting it on PS5. So I'm hoping that it does really well, that there's a physical edition too, because
I'll definitely having that physical. Stream it. But I like having like random fun, easy like things to stream.
So. Nice. Awesome.
Right. Yeah.
I also feel like now that since you came onto the show, I have to platinum the game, so hopefully it's not extremely difficult.
No, it's not. It's not the longest thing to do, but I mean, you do have to play through it, to get as many of the dates and that kind of thing. And I honestly think it's one of the more fun platinums personally, yeah. Because you're rewarded with, it's not just a grind. It's you're unlocking new characters and tons of new content. And it's kind of always new stuff to see on that journey.
Like, oh my God, I didn't take Van Helsing to the strip club. That's hilarious. Yeah. You know, like,
I wouldn't take Van Helsing to a
strip. Justin, you can write your own strat guide now.
I made my own trophy guide for this. No.
Nice.
Yeah, because I've seen some trophies where it's like you have to beat the game in the hardest difficulty without dying and that kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't want to do that.
I love trophy hunting and whatnot, but I so it's rewarding and punishing and you know, it's probably on the easier side.
That's fine with anything. Me.
Yeah. It's about joy. It's not about it's not terribly difficult to make something super hard, but it's to make something full of joy, I think, is a little bit more of a challenge.
I'd rather it be fun and easy than hard and horrible. So,
I have to agree on that. Yeah,
I feel like if something gets too hard, then it's not enjoyable.
I don't know. Considering this game, that might be the opposite. But
true. Anyway,
but yeah, no, we're doing a Midwest goodbye now. That's the thing with us.
I thought we're doing. How do we end
this? Where's the Italian bye?
Hey, get the fuck out! Bye. Hey, Justin, tell us no.
Where we can find these games?
Oh, they already said
everywhere.
It's gonna be PS5.
All right, yeah.
Xbox Series S and X, and if they make like an economy, and it's like, oh, the Xbox sex. It's coming out on PC, the Epic Game Store, and Steam as well. Yep. You can wishlist it on those, and you can follow them on social media. The Deep End Games.
Yep.
Yes, you can also they have a Romancelvania Twitter page. Then we have a Twitter page and a Facebook page and Tumblr page and TikTok page and a whatever page. We got a lot of stuff, so
you'll find us.
And then to also put an ether in your next game, can we voice somebody? Not a huge role, just like one line.
Justin, all you would voice was fart sounds.
Hey, you know what? If there is a fart monster, I have to be him.
I'm just gonna say, fun fact: our little Discord likes playing. When I said we like dating games, we do. We really like Monster Prom.
Nice.
And we'll sit there and voice act while we all play.
So
yeah, you need voice actors. We got you.
I will check those out. We'll audition you.
Awesome. That was the worst audition I've ever had. I've never done this before. I'm sorry. I've got the setup.
So things go well. Like you can imagine where... the show format here that lends itself very nicely to lots more monsters. We got a laundry list of characters we'd love to visit.
Yeah.
And so, fingers crossed.
Hey, that'd be cool. It's like, even if it was like a voice log thing, like to my dad, be like, Dad, I'm in this game. Play it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Good luck finding it. I don't know where it is.
All right, y'all. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
March 7th.
This is our friendliest goodbye. We're just like, bye.
Bye.
Yay.